Aim Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhupada Shri Dwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vindakija Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopina Shri Makunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanand All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Namaha Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Sri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Yati Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paska Chati Satani Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Utapadakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ravanatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Vrijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ravata Sri Vishakam Vitam Shtava Chakapa Jivisa Kipa Sindhaviyava Chapati Tanan Pavanevya Vaishnavam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's July 21st, 2019. In Ljubljana, Slovenia, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, Text 41 to 54. And now we have a verse on the floor.
Wi-Fi difficulty.
We're having Wi-Fi difficulty. All right, well, if you have a phone, it's 6:14:41. If you have a book, if you have a phone, 6:14:41. Dasinam ko nu santapa.
Dasinam ko nu santapa.
Swamina paricharyaya.
Swamina paricharyaya.
Abhikshnam labda mananam. Dasya das eva durbhaga.
Dasya das eva durbhaga.
Anyone who has a phone or a book, you can chant.
He's going to be in a couple of seconds.
That's it. If you have a phone, please chant.
Dasinam kono santapa.
Dasinam. Of the maidservants. Kaha. What? Nu. Indeed. Santapaha, lamentation. Swaminaha, unto the husband. Paricharyaya, by rendering service. Abhikshnam, constantly. Labdamananam, honored. Dasyaha, of the maidservant. Dasi Iva, like a maidservant. Durbhagaha, most unfortunate. Alright, so this verse is the opposite of the Trinadavi verse. So here these women are expressing the exact opposite of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches. Translation, even maidservants who are constantly engaged in rendering service to the husband are honored by the husband, and thus they have nothing for which to lament. Our position, however, is that we are maidservants of the maidservant. Therefore, we are most unfortunate. So what are they interested in? We have mananam. Amanina, manadena. What are they interested in? Honor and respect. They're interested in honor and respect. Are they giving respect to their husband? Are they giving respect to their husband? Are they? No. Are they giving respect to Krita Duti? No. Are they giving respect to the boy? We don't know his name. No. Could they choose that?
Yes.
Yes. They could choose to honor their husband and honor Kriti Dutti and honor the son. They could choose to think of the son as
their son.
I'm sure we know people who have stepmothers, yes? Nowadays it's not usually through polygamy, it's through divorce and remarriage, but they're still stepmothers, yes? Maybe some of us in this room have a stepmother or had a stepmother. Can a stepmother be kind to the children?
Yes.
I mean, my stepmother was not very kind to us, but is that possible? Yes. Or a stepfather be kind to the children?
Yes.
Of course. We know so many stepmothers who accepted the children of her husband as her own children and worked for the welfare of her husband. Do we all know people like this?
Yes.
Do we know people like this in this time? Yes?
Yes.
Yes. Right? I know people where the stepmother treats the husband's children and treats the mother of the husband's children with respect and with honor. And doesn't go around saying, I'm just the maidservant of the maidservant. What are we supposed to become?
Servant of the servant.
The servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. This is the aspiration of the devotees, the real devotees. These were not ordinary people. You have to remember, they saw Narada and Angira Muni personally. These weren't just like some people out on the street. Well, these people had, and these were queens, they certainly had the capacity to deal with their situation differently. Correct? Yes? And we see some good examples in the Bhagavatam. We see Suniti, even though her husband completely neglected her, she still honored her husband, and who did she take shelter of?
Krishna.
Of Krishna, yes. And when her son, who's Suniti's son?
Dhruva.
When he got into the same mood that these queens are in, she said, take shelter of the Lord. Take shelter of the Lord. So we often think, like these ladies are thinking, if I have a certain circumstance, I must respond in a certain way. And we often project that onto other people. We might say, oh, if your husband has left you, you must be unhappy. You have to be unhappy. Why do you have to be? Prabhupada says in the 20th chapter of Krishna book, he says that the materialists think that everything in this world is very aggressive, but the devotees see that everything is happily situated. We have examples in the Bhagavatam, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, somebody's son dies, their wife dies, their husband dies, or this or that catastrophe happens. And they don't respond like this. They take shelter of Krishna. We were talking yesterday about how Bharat Maharaj was mistreated by his stepbrothers and stepmother after the death of his parents. But he wasn't bothered. He didn't say, oh, I'm so unfortunate. Like they're saying here, Durbhaga. Bhaga means fortune. It said, this is our great misfortune. If they had chosen to say, oh, now there's an heir for the kingdom. Finally, our husband is happy, the kingdom is happy. Let us serve Krita Dutti. Let us be happy to serve Krita Dutti. But they saw her as a rival. So in the spiritual world, there's some rivalry in affection. That's another thing. But everyone sees everything as and everyone as another servant of Krishna. Oh, let me help this servant of Krishna. They could have seen, oh, Kritaduti is also a servant of Krishna. If I serve her and serve her son, I will be happy. And then they would have been happy and peaceful, and the story would have had a very different ending. So it gets worse. Text 42. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, being neglected by their husband and seeing Kritaduti's opulence and possessing a son. Kritaduti's co-wives always burned in envy, which became extremely strong. Balaman Adbhut. And this is exactly what happens. I'm sure that at least most of us have had this experience. Somebody does something that we interpret as harming us. Now again, Chitraketu was guilty here. He should have taken better care of these ladies. He was responsible for them. So he has some fault here. At the same time, we could think, well, he's pretty excited to get this son after so long, yes? And sometimes when people are excited in a new relationship, they kind of forget everybody else. It's just what happens. You see this when people get married. And when my oldest son got married, it was actually kind of disturbing for me that it's like all of a sudden he forgot that he had a relationship with me. But after a while, things balanced again. You know, but in the beginning, when your children get married, they're just into their spouse. They forget about everybody else, their brothers and sisters, their parents, and or when you have a new baby, any of you who are parents, when you have a new baby, the world goes away. It's very embarrassing. I don't know. So when my daughter was born, our son was about 3. We were living in the New York Temple, which had an elevator. We lived on the 9th floor. And one day after Guru Puja, I got in the elevator with my little baby daughter, and I forgot about my son. I just forgot. And you know, the elevator's going up like, oh no, I forgot my son. This is natural. You know, and I was feeling so much guilt. And there was another lady in the elevator. And she says, you know, when you have a new toy, you forget the old ones. And I'm like, oh yeah. So the queens could have thought like that. You know, our husband, he's so absorbed in his child that he's not trying to neglect us. He doesn't that he doesn't love us anymore. It's just he's absorbed like that. Now, of course, this happens transcendentally when we become absorbed in Krishna. We may forget other things. This may have disturbed our non-devotee family. Those of us who have non-devotee family members. You know, when we first found out about Krishna, it's like, I just want to go to the temple. And our family members are thinking, what is wrong with you? So this happens materially also. So they could have thought like that. And they could have thought, let us help our husband's happiness, let us help Kritaduti's happiness. But instead, they interpreted things differently. They interpreted that this woman has become our enemy, that our husband has become our enemy, and it's all the fault of the child. Child has become our enemy. As the queens, they also had a responsibility to see that there was succession in the kingdom. This was part of their own duty. And having these thoughts, they thought these thoughts over and over and over again. So they made up their own story about what was going on, and they thought these things over and over and over and over. And it was like pouring fuel into this fire of envy that got stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. And this is typical for a materialistic person. We think somebody has offended me, somebody has dishonored me, somebody has hurt me, and we play this story over and over. We tell other people. I'm sure the queens were talking to each other about this. Oh, I'm so... Yes, we are so unfortunate. And it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. As their envy increased, they lost their intelligence, being extremely hard-hearted and unable to tolerate the king's neglect. They finally administered poison to the son. So this is, of course, rather extreme. But even today, half of all murders are between intimate family members. This is a reality. Right? And so by meditating on how they were offended, their envy got so strong that they lost their intelligence. Doesn't Krishna talk about this in the Bhagavad Gita? Where does he talk about this in the Bhagavad Gita? Yes. Anybody know the verses? What chapter is it in?
Third chapter.
Sorry. Close.
Second.
End of the second chapter. Text 62 and 63. And what does it say? First, what we do is we
meditate.
We contemplate. So that's what they were doing. Now he's neglecting us. We're the servants of the servants. And then after we contemplate, we get what?
Attached.
And from attachment comes
anger.
Lust. I want to be honored. I have to be honored. And then?
Anger.
And then?
Illusion.
Bewilderment of intelligence. Losing your memory. Who here has ever experienced that? Hey, it's real. Hopefully we haven't poisoned anybody. Generally we stop before we get to that point. But maybe we wanted to. You know, sometimes we lose our intelligence so much we're thinking, I wish you would just die. I wish you would just die. Or move to Nigeria or something. We start wishing some misfortune on somebody. And we may even actively give them some misfortune. Maybe we go to the temple authorities and say, you know, that brahmachari is keeping sweets in his room. It's against the rules, you know. We may try to do something to cause some trouble for somebody else, even if we don't poison them. Hopefully, none of you, I'm not going to ask any of you if you've poisoned anybody. Hopefully, we haven't gone that far. But we may try to get them fired, we may try to get them in trouble, we may spread rumors about them, we may spread lies about them. I know one instance where there was a devotee who was managing a project. And the wife of one of the other leaders in the project, she didn't like this manager. So he was supposed to take care of the brahmacharis. And so he bought them new bedding. And he bought a bigger water filter. There wasn't a big enough water filter. So he was spending some money on things like this. Because that was his service. He was supposed to be taking care of the brahmacharis. And then the wife of one of the other devotee leaders, she accused him of being a thief. She said, you are a thief. And she went around everybody telling them they were a thief. This man is a thief. And finally, ISKCON Resolve got involved and they said, what is your evidence that he is a thief? Oh, he spent this money on the bedding and the water filter. Unnecessary. Taking money from the temple for this. And still there are people who think he was a thief. So people may even lie. They may even just make something up. Yes? Maybe somebody has lied about us? No. Because they think that we're their enemy. So we may try to hurt somebody. This is explained nicely in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where it says the demons, they say, he is my enemy and I have killed him, and my other enemy, I'll also kill him. So again, we may not be killing our enemies, but we may tell lies about them, we may tell truthful, nasty things about them. We may try to damage them in some way. Well, you don't want to be with that person. You know what they did. Oh, yeah, they did this and that and the other. People do this to Krishna also. Who did this to Krishna? When did this happen to Krishna? Shishupal, yes. And was another time this was done to Krishna? Pandraka, yes, what's another time? Yes, with the Shamantaka jewel, yes. Oh, Krishna, he must have killed that Prasena. He must have taken the jewel. We heard him talking to Satrajit. He wanted it, you know. Unaware of the poison administered by her co-wives, Kring quit duty, walked within the house, thinking that her son was sleeping deeply. She did not understand that he was dead. Thinking that her child had been sleeping for a long time, Queen Kritaduti, who was certainly very intelligent, ordered the nurse, "My dear friend, please bring my son here." When the maidservant approached the child, who was lying down, she saw that his eyes were turned upward. There were no signs of life, all his senses having stopped, and she could understand that the child was dead. Seeing this, she immediately cried, "Now I am doomed," and fell to the ground, because that was her responsibility to take care of the child. In great agitation, the maidservant struck her breast with both hands and cried loudly in regretful words. Hearing her loud voice, the queen immediately came, and when she approached her son, she saw that he was suddenly dead. In great lamentation, her hair and dress in disarray, the queen fell to the ground unconscious. O King Pariket, hearing the loud crying, all the inhabitants of the palace came, both men and women. Being equally aggrieved, they also began to cry. The queens who had administered the poison also cried pretentiously, knowing full well their offense. When King Chitraketu heard of his son's death from unknown causes, he became almost blind. Because of his great affection for his son, his lamentation grew like a blazing fire, and as he went to see the dead child, he kept slipping and falling on the ground. Reminds me of the Kaliya pastime, when Krishna was in coils of Kaliya, and the residents of Vrindavan saw all these bad omens, and they thought Krishna was going to die. And they're running to the Yamuna, and as they're running, they're crying, and they're crying so much, the path has become muddy, and they're slipping and falling. So this kind of lamentation is there transcendentally also. How Chitraketu is lamenting is just simply miserable. It's just simply miserable. But there is a real rasa where this is pleasurable. So when Krishna goes to Mathura, when he's in Kaliya, there is also this kind of great, great grief and lamentation, so that the residents of Vrindavan become almost mad. And it's interesting with these stories. You know, materialistic people, they like to hear these kind of stories too. I mean, I was thinking this would make a very good movie, yeah. But people were trying to feel this rasa, the rasa that we are meant to feel with Krishna. Instead, we are feeling in some materialistic way. The Prabhupada says everything we're doing, we're trying to experience some rasa. Keep going on with this verse. Surrounded by his ministers and other officers and the learned brahmanas present, the king approached and fell unconscious at the child's feet, his hair and dress scattered. When the king, breathing heavily, regained consciousness, his eyes were tearful and he could not speak. So again, we can think of so many instances of where this is actually ecstatic symptoms with Krishna. It's just this morning reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the Lord goes into this. He becomes unconscious and his body transforms and he can't speak, thinking of Krishna. Text 52. When the queen saw her husband, King Chitraketu emerged in great lamentation and saw the dead child, who was the only son in the family. she lamented in various ways. This increased the pain in the cores of the hearts of all the inhabitants of the palace, the ministers and the brahmanas. So just like the other queens were increasing their envy and their anger more and more, so now everyone is increasing their grief more and more. The garland of flowers decorating the queen's head fell and her hair scattered. Falling tears melted the kalulium on her eyes and moistened her breasts, which were covered with kumkum powder. As she lamented the loss of her son, her loud crying resembled the sweet sound of a karari bird. So in this world, we are sometimes going to have this intense, intense emotion, isn't it? Yes? I'm sure sometime in our life we have experienced very intense emotion. Yes? That just gets more and more and more and more and more. And when this happens, we can think this is meant for Krishna. That is one way to deal with the intense waves of emotion. This is meant for Krishna. This grief, this fear, this anger, shame, whatever, it is meant for Krishna, the nectar devotion. There's so many explanations of these intense emotions in relation to Krishna, which actually bring happiness. All right, so what is she going to do now? Kritaduti, for lamenting and lamenting. She says, alas, oho, alas, O providence, O creator, you are certainly inexperienced in creation. For during the lifetime of a father, you have caused the death of his son, thus acting in opposition to your creative laws. If you are determined to contradict these laws, you are certainly the enemy of living entities and are never merciful. Prabhupada's purport. This is the way a conditioned soul condemns the supreme creator when he meets reverses. Sometimes he accuses the Supreme Personality of Godhead of being crooked because some people are happy and some people are not. Here the queen blames Supreme Providence for her son's death. Following the creative laws, a father should die first and then his son. If the creative laws are changed according to the whims of Providence, then Providence certainly should not be considered merciful, but must be considered inimical to the creative being. Actually, it is not the creator, but the conditioned soul who is inexperienced. He does not know how these subtle laws of fruitive activity work, and without knowledge of these laws of nature, he ignorantly criticizes the Supreme Personality of God. So maybe we have also done this in our own misfortune. Anybody here ever gotten angry at God when something went wrong? Anybody ever gotten angry at God? So she's getting angry at God. Of course, the residents of Vrindavan also get angry at Narayan or at Krishna. But that again is a rasa. It's loving. Right? Sometimes we get angry at someone we love as part of an expression of love. But this is different. She thinks she knows better than God what should happen and what should not happen. When we get angry at Krishna in our misfortune, we're saying, you know, I should be running the universe. You don't know what you're doing. I would be a much better God than you. So this reminds me of, in the first canto, with Dharma the bull, when Maharaj Parikit comes to him and says, why are you suffering? Which seems to be an absolutely absurd question. Kali is standing right there, beating the bull. If someone's standing right there, beating someone, you don't say to the victim, so what's the cause of your suffering? I mean, I would look at them and say, duh, it's this guy who's beating me. What's your problem? But Dharma the Bull doesn't say this. He says, you know, nobody really knows why we're suffering. There's many causes. And I've identified their five causes. He says, one cause is we don't know. We just don't know. You just kind of have to suffer, just the way it is. Another cause, there's blind laws of nature, which is kind of what Krittadutti's saying here. Like, what's wrong with you, God? Why don't you follow your laws? At least she understands there's a God. So materialistic people, especially the materialistic, mechanistic science of the modern age, says like this. The reason we're suffering is that there's laws of nature that cause suffering. There's something programmed into our cells that makes them get old and die. The way the world is with its tectonic plates, it causes volcanoes and earthquakes. Now, these are laws of nature. So how will we get free of suffering then? Well, we'll become the masters of the laws of nature. That's what modern science, modern mechanistic science is all about, right? We'll figure out the laws and then we'll use them for our purposes. Right? It's like when I was in school. I thought, okay, if I can figure out the rules of the school and the rules of the teachers, then I can manipulate them to get what I want. And it worked quite well, actually. I mean, it really did, you know. I just figured if I get good grades, if I get like all A's and A pluses, and I don't misbehave in the classroom, then the teachers will trust me. And they'll let me do what I want. That was my technique with my parents as well. It was quite effective. You know, I got away with all kinds of things. So that's the way the scientists are thinking. They're thinking, you know, if I can just figure out what the rules are, I can game the system. Yes? And so many of the courses and books right now, you know, how to make money, how to get a relationship, how to have good health, they're all about that. Figure out how the universe works, figure out the gross rules, figure out the subtle rules, master them. And then you'll be happy. This is what is the big distraction for the yogis. They figure out the subtle laws of nature. And they think, okay, I'll manipulate the world. All right, another idea is there is no suffering. Suffering is an illusion. The whole world is an illusion. The world doesn't exist. Suffering doesn't exist. Personality doesn't exist. We're all just Brahman, or we're all the void. This is also a very popular philosophy. And how do you get free of suffering then? You become completely detached and you merge into Brahman and then there's no more suffering. Because it never existed in the first place. There was no sun, there was no poison, there was no husband, there was no kingdom. It was all just some imagination. Then there's another theory. The other theory is there's subtle laws of karma and reincarnation, and we're suffering because of things that we do. So we do something wrong, we suffer, we do something right, we enjoy. So how do you get free of suffering then? Come on, this is a simple answer. You do good things, right? You get good karma. This was King Riga's idea. I'm going to do lots and 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 lots of pious activities, and then I won't suffer. Many people work according to this philosophy. If I'm a good person, I won't suffer. I remember speaking to one person who had been a devotee and pretty much left Krishna consciousness. And was saying to me, you know, Armila, there's so many spiritual paths. I have my own spiritual path. So the next day I said to him, so what is your spiritual path? He said, I'm trying to be a good person. So that's his philosophy. And he still believes in karma and reincarnation. Okay, and then there's the philosophy that God is just deciding who suffers and who enjoys. And so we should just trust him. So this is very much, many religions teach like this. You know, if you find literature, say, by Christians, I'm not so familiar with Islam, but, you know, that this is somehow God is doing everything for our benefit, and so what appears like suffering is actually for our benefit, and therefore we should trust him. You know, like the parents, they may take the child to the doctor to get an injection, which is painful, but they have the child's interest in mind. Or they may take away a toy, but they have the child's interest in mind. So we should trust God. So in these five different philosophies, one just says, we don't know, and so there's nothing we can do. We just have to accept in ignorance. The other one says, control nature. It's all nature's laws, blind laws control nature. The other one says, just get detached from nature and merge into the Brahman or become nothing. The other is, become a good person. And the other is, we'll just trust God, he knows what he's doing. So, of course, all of these are right and all of them are wrong. It's like the blind people who were feeling an elephant and saying, oh, the elephant is a wall, oh, the elephant is a pillar, oh, the elephant is a rope, the elephant is a fan. So they were all right, but they were all wrong. So our Krishna conscious philosophy actually includes all of these ways of understanding suffering. We say ultimately Krishna's in control and he's merciful and our so-called suffering is actually beneficial. We also say he's not responsible for our suffering and he's not engineering our suffering. We've engineered our own suffering through our own karma. We also say that the world is an illusion. We don't say it's unreal, but we do say it's an illusion and that none of us are actually suffering at all. It's like the suffering in a dream. And we also say that there are laws of nature, and when you violate nature's laws, you suffer. And we also say that ultimately you cannot understand these things. That we are not going to be able to fully understand exactly why we have a particular suffering and a particular enjoyment. We're too small. So all of these things are true. But our response to suffering is not to blame Krishna or to try to become expert controllers of the material nature. And it's not just that we trust Krishna on a material level that he's going to make everything work out right materially. Our way of responding to suffering, ideally, and I can't say that all of us are going to be able to do this all of the time, but our ideal way of responding to suffering is saying, I am ultimately the cause of my own suffering. Whether it's through my bad karma, whether it's through my offenses, whether it's through my material attachments, my lack of surrender, however I want to look at it, I, the soul, have no suffering. And ultimately, I have no suffering even at the present moment. The nice thing about saying that all of my suffering is due to me means that I actually can do something about it. But not exactly any of the things on this list. The thing I can do about it is I can regain my original spiritual nature and stop trying to be the controller of material nature. In fact, my own experience and realization is that all of our suffering comes from trying to be the controller of material nature. Even the religionists that say we can get free of suffering by trusting God, they're often taking that as simply another way to control material nature. Just like the person who believes in karma and says, if I'm a good person, I won't suffer. So these people say, if I'm a religious person, I won't suffer. You follow? It's another category of good. And we run into that. I hear devotees say this, and I've said this, and I've thought this. I'm chanting my 16 rounds. I'm coming to Mangalarjik. I'm following the principles. I'm reading the Bhagavatam. Why am I sick? It's not fair. So any attempt to control material nature, whether we're trying to control it through chemistry, through yoga, through detachment, through pious activities, or even through religion and surrender, if we're trying to control material nature through surrender, think about that for a minute, we will suffer. And all suffering comes not from the thing, not from the broken arm, not from the insulting words, not from the relative who has, you know, gets married or has a new baby and so they don't call you for 3 years. Not from that, but from our resisting the situation and trying to control it. And when we actually surrender, not as a tactic to get free from suffering, but when we actually surrender out of love, then we find that there's no suffering. And we might say, well, the great devotees apparently have suffering. Like Bhishma said to the Pandavas, who can understand why you are suffering so much? But they were experiencing rasa. Because all of these emotions have their counterpart in rasa. All of these emotions have their counterpart in anubhav and bibhav and sattvikabhavs. All of them. And so it may apparently appear that Arjuna is also lamenting at the death of Abhimanyu, just like Chitraketu and Kritita. But he's not. He's experiencing rasa, actual rasa. So that is what we want to do. That should be our response to suffering. And I personally started on a journey to understanding this. I certainly haven't completed that journey. It was about 41 years ago when I was reading in Teachings of Lord Kapila that Prabhupada said that Stalin had surgical operation without anesthesia. And even a materialistic person can situate their mind in such a way that they will not feel the pain of a surgical operation. And you think a surgical operation is objective pain. It's completely objective. It's not an imagination. Somebody's taking a scalpel and cutting open your body, but he had no pain. He said, similarly, one who knows how to absorb their mind properly in Krishna consciousness will not experience the pains of this world. And that is actually a fact. And then we stop blaming God because we see that the whole problem is my absorption, my desire to be an independent controller, my rebellion. That's the problem. Whether it's from some karma from 200 lifetimes ago or whether it's some offense to a devotee, or those are all just the external superficialities of the thing. Questions, comments, objections, corrections. Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you. You mentioned suffering and one of the six symptoms of pure devotional service, klesha dini,
yes,
which is also the beginning stage of...
Yes, sadhana. It's in the early stages of sadhana.
Yeah.
Yes.
What that means in connecting to suffering.
Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting.
One of the things that's fascinated me for years, especially since I've had a whole lifetime of intense physical suffering, So that it really fascinated me. You know, it's just like, okay, aren't I in the beginning stages of sadhana? Why am I still suffering? Do you really want to know the answer? It's because we're trying to control the material nature, and therefore we're not actually even in the beginning stages of sadhana. I'm sorry. But it's the truth. Look, if Stalin can learn how to not to feel the pain of a surgical operation, okay, and he wasn't a sadhaka, I don't think so. Anybody want to argue that Stalin was a neophyte devotee? I mean, okay, if you're Mahabhagavata, you'll see everyone is a devotee, but I don't think so. How could he not experience a surgical operation as pain? We can do that too.
Maybe he was drunk.
No, he wasn't drunk. I met a medical doctor who was allergic to anesthesia, and she told me she had to have some abdominal surgery at one point. And she was able to have it without pain by a mental adjustment. So yes, it is possible.
How?
By giving up resistance. And giving up fear. And the desire to control. Like my god brother Sridhar Maharaj, he used to like to say, pain is inevitable, suffering is a choice. And I would get angry when he would say that, honestly. Like Hrithadhuti is getting angry. I'd say, that's nonsense. But it's true. Look, there is a whole lot of solid medical evidence that if people are absorbed in the present moment, which is recommended, right? Bhaktivinoda says, forget about the past, don't think about the future, be in the moment. If people are absorbed in the present moment, if they're full of gratitude at every moment, if they don't catastrophize and be afraid. Like these women, what did they do? They catastrophized this, didn't they? They took the fact that their husband was so absorbed in his son and Kritaduti, and they created a whole catastrophic idea of it. They catastrophized. They became terrified. Kritaduti is also full of fear and catastrophe. If people don't respond to difficulties with fear and catastrophizing, if they're in the present, if they're full of gratitude, we're talking about materialistic people, their pain will go away. Even physical pain, what to speak of emotional pain. There's like solid research out there, solid evidence. And what's happening now in medical science, this is becoming a new branch of medical science. So what to speak of for the devotee? So yes, we should be experiencing that. We should, frankly. And we can, frankly. There's a devotee I know who's was put by circumstances of actions of other people into what appeared to be an extremely difficult situation. And so many of her friends came to her and said, you must be suffering so much. And she said, actually, I'm not. And they said, well, then you must be in some sort of delusion. And she found that many of her devotee friends tried to convince her that she should be suffering, which she found quite fascinating and somewhat disturbing. And I was just talking to her yesterday, and she says, I'm getting to dress the deities. My life is so blessed. And if I told you what had happened in her life, you'd think, this is a crazy lady. She said, I'm just always happy because I'm choosing joy. So it can be done. It can be done. It works. It can be done. Well, we have to do it. I don't know what to say. We have to actually, you know, we have to deal with our emotions the way Krishna tells us in the Gita after giving the fall down sequence from contemplation to attachment to lust, to anger, to bewilderment. Then what does he say in the next verse? Therefore become free from all attachment and aversion. Regulate the senses and you will get the mercy of the Lord. This is second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I find reading the Bhagavad Gita very embarrassing, frankly. It's just beginning Krishna consciousness. And every time I read the Bhagavad Gita, it always seems so high to me. Do any of you have that experience? I mean, thinking this is basic stuff. You know, Bhagavatam is the next step. Chaitanya Charitamrita is the next step. I'm right now at the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And this morning I'm reading this section where Mahaprabhu is just in madness talking about the nectar of Krishna's lips. You know, it's like, whoo! Way up in the... Way in Goloka Vrindavan. You know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, become free from attachment and aversion. And I'm going, But if we do that, if we become free from attachment and aversion, emotionally, if we develop the qualities he talks about in 16, 1 to 3, 13, 8 through 12, you know, you read that and you go, okay. If we actually do that, then we will not experience the things in this world as pain and suffering. We just won't. We'll know that they happen. We'll know, I just burned my hand on the stove. I have to take care of it. We'll feel that there's some sensation in the body, but we won't experience it as pain. We'll know that somebody just insulted us. It's not that we'll become idiots and we won't know. But we won't experience it as suffering.
Regarding the definition of pure devotion, sorry, to which part of definition this resistance of situation and control over the material nature is part of? Because from that definition, the pleasure is referring, right?
The first part, sunyam.
Sunyam.
Yeah, we want something else. But you know, it's not an offense to want something else, it's an offense to maintain the wanting of something else. It's expected because this kleshagni that's supposed to happen in the beginning of our Krishna conscious journey, it's understood that at the beginning of our Krishna conscious journey, we will want other things. Duh. You know, it's not that we start at prema. But it's the maintaining material attachments, it's holding on to them. That's the problem. That's the whole problem. And if materialists can learn to let go, why can't we? What is our excuse? If Stalin can do it, what is my problem? I took that when I read that as a challenge. And what's interesting is it's not exactly something that we do as the doers. Anyway, I hope at least you found this intriguing enough to think about, would I like to make a step in this direction? Because very honestly, these people in this Bhagavatam chapter are not gross materialistic people. They're just not. These are people who met Narada and Angira. They're not just, you know, some guys out drinking beer on a Saturday night. It's not who they are. And still, they're becoming bewildered in this way. So just because we've ostensibly taken up Krishna consciousness, and we see, we have to, again, speak very honestly, and I'm speaking about myself also, but we see that many people can take up Krishna consciousness externally, very pukka, for many, many, many years, and still have the same mentality that we're finding here. We're finding here with the queens who poison the child, with Chitraketu, and with Kritaduti. But it's possible to continue to hold on to that mentality. And if we hold on to that mentality, it's an offense against chanting. It doesn't. Our chanting doesn't then. And our, like rowing the boat with the anchor. Is that okay? Anything else? It's after 9, so I'm a little hesitant.
So I would just like to get these...
But I have leaders here. They haven't stopped me yet. I don't know if they're just being polite or... You never know, you know?
Yeah. So they hold on that mentality. Why? Because they have... motives for themselves? Or
why do we hold on to these things? We hold on to these things because we're attachment and fear and anger. We're thinking, you know, if I don't hold on to these things, I won't be happy. I have to be the controller. If I let go of being the controller, then it's going to be even worse. You know, I'm suffering right now, but if I actually surrender, wow, it's going to get really bad.
How much then paka sadhana influence on us if we get this?
Eventually, Prabhupada says even offensive chanting and offensive sadhana, eventually, it just takes time. He said, like if you're trying to light a fire with wet wood, you have to dry out the wood first. And of course, if you're pouring water on your wood at the same time, then it will take a very long time. So that's, again, in our hands. So we encourage people to do sadhana and take up the process of bhakti even if they're offensive. Because in time, that will go. And once it's gone, it's gone. It doesn't really matter if it took 50 years or 50 lifetimes or 50 seconds in the ultimate reality. I mean, it matters when you're in it. But in the ultimate reality, it really doesn't make much difference. So therefore, we encourage everybody to do that. But we should also try to encourage people to come to the depth of bhakti. You know, anything that's of value, this is my personal conviction. And if someone's listening to this who's in another system, I don't mean any disrespect. My personal conviction is that anything of value in any other genuine spiritual and religious systems is in our tradition. That's my own personal conviction. So, if gross materialistic demons can learn how to become free from pain, and people in other systems. It's in our shastra, throughout our shastra. It's all over the place. We just have to take it seriously. We just have to, oh, one is free from all attachment and aversion, and then get the mercy of the Lord. Okay, what's for prasadam? You know, it's a matter of, do I feel that Krishna is speaking to me, and is he saying something that he expects that I can do? It's just chapter 2, text 64. It's not, you know, Ancha 16 of Chaitanya Charitamrita that I look at and go, oh, I don't think I can do that. You know, but I can probably do Gita 2:64. Probably. The odds are in my favor that I can do that. You know, I can probably do Gita 8 through 12 and 16:1-3. I can probably do that. That's probably an achievable thing. So that kind of conviction, okay, let me do it. And Krishna says, this indeed is actual freedom from all miseries caused by material contact. That's chapter 6. Yeah? Should be able to do that. Yeah. Maybe I can't do Bhagavatam. Maybe I can't do that. Maybe I certainly can't do a lot of the stuff in CC. Like, no way. Just offer my respects. But Gita, come on. You should be able to do it. Yeah? So we're supposed to. Do it, really. Yeah? If you can bless me, that's somehow. Actually live the Bhagavad Gita. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.